Mini episode 539 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by that NBA lottery pick, your pop culture influenced look at the world of hoops. Follow them on the web at that NBALotteryPick.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the FDH Lounge coverage of the 1991 Royal Rumble. It is part 1B of the Kyle Ross history of the Royal Rumble series. Part one, of course, goes 88 to 92. We are covering these in historical chunks here. 1991, the fourth
this is
part
called
of the series.
The beginning to the best.
Yes, yes.
And it will not end in 1991.
No, because this is the worst of the first part of this. I know that you and I agree. We have the best coming, of course, the year after 1992. For anybody wanting background on the Royal Rumble, how this came to be, how it was presented in the early years, I'll refer you back to Part 1A, 1988. We did a lot of coverage of it. Probably the first half of that entire webcast was talking big picture here. The rest of these were going year to year. 91, as we're coming into that, it's the year after, of course, the Royal Rumble that was dominated by the spot of Hogan Warrior that set up the big WrestleMania VI title match, what was supposed to be the passing of the torch to the Ultimate Warrior.
Oops.
And instead, and we'll get to this, that what it was setting up was the Warrior to drop the title in this match here. And again, I think the early plan may perhaps have been for a Warrior-Hogan rematch at WrestleMania 7, but along the way, during the course of the previous year, when the setup to the Gulf War happened with the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait, Sergeant Slaughter becomes part of the picture. Vince signs him away from the dying days of the AWA to come in and be the biggest mega heel in the company, and that sets up here essentially the two of them having a title match. And this set up a new tradition for the Royal Rumble, Kyle Ross. It would be interrupted in 1992 when the title itself was on the line. But from 91 to the present, save 1992, it would always be a double main event, or in the years to come, maybe even triple main event in the brand split era, but a world title match and the Royal Rumble. We had not had this before. The world title would now be segregated from the Rumble match itself.
Couple things. This is probably, as far as the Rumble, which we'll get to in a little bit, of the pay-per-view Rumbles is definitely the worst.
So far.
Yeah, of the first four. But the irony here is that it's the first time we got a good undercard. Or an undercard that had substance to it, at least.
Substantive,
well, let's say that. Now, I like this undercard, I think, a little bit more than you do. Maybe a lot of it more. The world title match is the key here with Warrior and Slaughter. I actually had in my notes, would Warrior Hogan 2 have been the better way to go for WrestleMania 7? It's funny, and we've talked about this in when we talked about the last two, in that, you know, 89 and 90, you didn't have the winner going on a challenge for the world title. In 89, it was totally a random thing with John Studd.
Yeah.
In 90, the actual champion won, but there was an angle in there to set up the WrestleMania title match. Here, you actually have the guy who wins the Rumble going on to face the guy who wins the title match.
That tradition officially started in 93, but unofficially started in 91.
And unofficially in 91. And let's break it down here. Let's just break down the whole macro picture of WWF at that point. 1990 did not go according to plan, obviously, with the Warrior champion. There were a lot of reasons for that. You and I have gone over them previously.
In our history of WrestleMania and history of SummerSlam anthologies.
Okay.
Check those out.
I've gone over them, you know, on SNS and stuff like that. The Warrior, I thought, was undercut at every turn by Hogan.
Yes.
I'm not saying the Warrior was ever going to be as good as Hogan because he was not.
Right.
But the undercutting that started right after the WrestleMania title switch did not help him, and the fact that Hogan got a better opponent to work with after that in Earthquake compounded the problem.
Right.
So it was very obvious, and I don't know when Vince realized it. It was before the end of the year, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very clear that he needed to go back to the old horse Hogan in lieu of a better option. Because I'll tell you, 1990 was just an awful year for WWE. They really needed some new talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, Flair doesn't come in until the latter half of 91. Piper comes back in 91. Sid comes in 91. You had some real influx. The Undertaker was brand new here at this point.
Yeah, 91 was a year of rejuvenation.
Yeah, 91 was
relatively
a
speaking.
Yes, relatively speaking. So you really had a stale product, I think, at this point.
Yes.
And the first I noted, and it's clear in retrospect, that, okay, this isn't working with Warrior, was Survivor Series. When they did that grand finale gimmick for the first time, that was an effort to kind of make the matches mean something. It was lame, I thought, just having the Survivors go on to another Survivor Series match. But what happened there in the end? You know, Hogan and Warrior both won, and they were both put back on equal footing.
Yes.
They weren't even trying to pretend that the Warrior was better than Hogan at that point.
And Hogan gives the interview afterwards with him there where Warrior is getting the little buddy treatment, the guy who beat him for the title.
I don't remember that, but I'll take your word for
it.
Yeah. Okay. So you talked about the Slaughter thing. I don't know. Slaughter, the way he said it, and I don't know who to trust. Everything. He claims that like Hogan wanted to work with Slaughter really bad.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming Slaughter was brought in, when he was brought in, it was done with the express intent for him to transition the title from Warrior to Hogan. I'm assuming from the moment he was brought in, the idea was to make him world champion.
Well, and here's the thing, too. It's a classic sort of motif. We didn't see it as much back in the day. This is the first time, really, I think, since, ironically, the Iron Sheik, who was part of his stable as Colonel Mustafa, Sergeant Slaughter's stable, the first time they were doing the transitional champion leading up to WrestleMania gimmick. They hadn't really been doing that previously.
No, and also, it winds up being the first heel to win a championship since the Iron Sheik, I believe.
That's true.
Because remember, Savage, you had other heels hold it for a brief time, but Savage had turned heel when he had won it as a face.
The Giant with his 45 seconds.
Yeah, but this was like the first time that, and it was, again, in a transitional phase, that a heel legitimately held the title. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
And they thought theoretically, anyways, that, you know, right kind of heat, wrong kind of heat, whatever, that Slaughter would be a red-hot transitional champion to drop it back to patriotic babyface Hogan at WrestleMania 7.
So you know me. I don't get offended, really, by anything.
Right.
And I was the guy who, back in 06, in the SNS days, late 05, early 06, you know, said that I wasn't, you know, morbidly offended, at least at the start, with the Eddie Guerrero stuff the WWE did.
Yeah.
Once, or, you know, they obviously took it too far.
I was offended at how they executed it.
But, you know, I think the idea of, you know, I always compared it, I think back then I did, and I've said it to you off air in subsequent conversations we've had, because why would we not talk about something that happened 8 years ago in pro wrestling?
Sure.
You know, in pro football, when someone's father died, you know, Brett Favre, I remember that Monday Night Football game, you know, John Madden, it was all he talked about for 3 hours.
Right.
And so the idea of, you know, Ray honoring his, you know, friend who legitimately died is fine. I just think they lost tact somewhere along the way.
Right.
But to bring it back to Slaughter and the thing with the Persian Gulf.
You going
to
tell me there was a good way to polish this turd?
No, there wasn't. And here's the thing. I was young at the time,
uh-huh.
And I remember reading some. I remember my dad, mm-hmm. I specifically remember this, showing me an article in the Plain Dealer,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, isn't the finest newspaper of all time by any means, but
true,
whatever.
True that.
You know, it was this editorial complaining about what McMahon was doing.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, I was like, oh, what do you, these people know about WWE? You know, I mean, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I was a 10-year-old kid. What do I know?
Mm-hmm.
But everything I've read about this, you know, like stuff Dave Meltzer's written, you know, stuff that he'd written at the time that I've gone back and read, and stuff that he's written ever since, this was really bad, man. It's why WrestleMania 7, I can't remember how low I mentioned it in mm-hmm. the anthologies, but, like, if I were to go back and read, like, right now, the way I feel about WrestleMania, like, I've down, like, as crazy as it may seem, I have downgraded WrestleMania 7 a lot through the years, even though I think the undercard is a little more entertaining than the previous two.
You know what, though, too?
And because the storyline,
uh-huh,
the main story, it's just, it's really bad. I mean, it's not just a bad wrestling storyline. It's offensive, and it should never have been done. And here is what I'm going to go with.
Mm-hmm.
Should they have, you know, because I guess when Slaughter was brought in, they didn't know. They weren't at war yet. I can't remember the exact timeline here that we were dealing with. But they were not at war yet.
No,
when
no,
Slaughter
no.
Brought
it
in.
Was late. The invasion happened beginning of August of 90. He came in and they started running vignettes like late August of 90. So.
Okay, so it was around that. So here's my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
The Warriors, like, towards the end of 90, he wasn't even doing anything. He didn't have a program at all after SummerSlam. He had a lame feud with Rick Rude. That ended. And he just didn't do anything.
He was with the Road Warriors and Six Mans against Demolition.
Yes.
The Saturday night's main event match with DiBiase that was the beginning of the seeds of the Savage feud.
Yeah.
You know, leave the thing in my head. Or No. That came from Royal Rumble. But anyways, the beginning of it. But you're right.
Yeah,
he
we'll
had no hot
here's
issues.
Here's my thing.
Yeah.
Should they have, and we'll talk about the Slaughter Warrior match in more detail in a second, but should they have put the title on Slaughter, like, right away or earlier? Because remember, you know, maybe Survivor Series needed a world title match that year. And should they have done it earlier, and then it would have given them, and then they could have had Warrior win it back here and then drop it to Hogan. I know that's a lot of world title changes for that era to happen, but would that have been a better thing? And then they could have gone with Warrior Hogan 2 at WrestleMania 7. Or did or should Slaughter just never have happened altogether?
It should have probably never happened in that way. Here's the thing, too. The other thing with WrestleMania 7, this has nothing to do with what you're saying, but it's the other reason that I have no interest in watching it again, too. It's one of the most depressing shows of all time to watch, because if you, in terms of, like, dead stars, I think, like, two-thirds of that card is dead.
Yeah.
You don't want to watch a bunch of, like, oh, God, a Kerry Von Erich match right before he offed
himself. Against Dino Bravo.
Against Dino Bravo before he got shot for smuggling cigarettes. I mean, these are things that are just...
Sorry, it's the most unbelievable story that ever happened in the history of the world.
Yeah, unbelievable. But that's what happens when you're in the underworld.
Yes.
But
I was going to say, it's also clear here by Rumble 91, although this is a hot live crowd in Miami...
Yeah.
By the way, now Miami, a big different from its sports crowds, by the
right.
way. I don't think Miami Arena was ever this hot for a Heat game, even during their recent
championship.
Yeah, not
exactly Miami Heat fans.
But the product had clearly cooled by this point, and that became apparent with WrestleMania 7, them having to move it from the LA, from the Coliseum to the sports arena.
Yeah, I've always made the joke about that we moved it for security purposes. Hey, Patterson, phone in a bomb threat, you know. Because there was no way they were going to fill the Coliseum.
It wasn't, and I'm not saying Warrior Hogan 2 would have.
Right.
It may have the product just may have just cooled by that point. But
right.
This was, you know, we talked about, even if the, you know, we didn't love everything about the Rumbles or that time period, Hogan Savage was done brilliantly leading up to WrestleMania 5. Hogan Warrior was done, I thought, pretty well going up to WrestleMania 6.
Yeah.
This is the first WrestleMania, I think of the first... Seven, even going back to the ones before the Royal Rumbles.
Right.
Where the build was bad.
It was. It was very bad. And also, too, you probably don't remember this. Maybe you do. But I remember Meltzer talking about this in the National at the time. They were going to be doing a segment at WrestleMania 7. They had had an on-again, off-again relationship over a period of time with Bob Costas.
Yeah, and he bowed out of it. Because
instant replay in wrestling. You know, that's what
it
was supposed to be about.
They brought Paul McGuire in.
Yes. Yeah.
Who would do anything for money, and he could have been drunk.
And the funny thing is, you know, you flash forward, what, about 12, 13 years, Vinnie Mac is doing the contentious segment with Bob
Costas. Well, because
Costas
he never forgets,
HBO.
Because let's make fun of Brian Williams, let's make fun of it, because, you know, heaven forbid he poked holes in the atrocious Senate campaign of Linda McMahon.
Exactly.
But
Vince always gets over, you know.
But what was I going to say? Bad build-up. WrestleMania, bad product. I had a point.
Well,
you said something national. I can't remember.
Well, and the you said, you know, that the build for it was bad, which is interesting because you've also pointed out that, again, comparable to the relative things of that time, a better undercard than what we had been getting. I'm still here, sitting here, though, to poke some holes in the undercard because there's some things I didn't like as much as you do, I'm sure.
Okay, well, so we'll get back to the title match in a second then?
Okay, yeah.
I thought Rockers Orient Express is an excellent opener. I gave it 4 stars, and I think it is one of the better pay-per-view WWF tag matches of that entire era.
This is one of these things where, you know, in a sense, it hurts for me to go back and watch it after hearing you talk about it, and I'll compare it to...
Maybe I shouldn't have said anything.
Well, maybe that's the thing. Like I enjoyed. I specifically went back from the 90 Great American Bash and watched Southern Boys Midnight Express, and I really liked it, but it was like, okay, you know, but did it live up to Kyle's hype job? I don't know about that.
Wait,
this
what?
One...
you don't like Southern Boys Midnight Express?
Like, I thought it was really good. I didn't think it was one of the 5 best tag team matches I'd ever seen.
What?
And I guess that was, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
I just... Seriously, that's... And this is nowhere near among the top 5 tag matches I've ever seen. Rockers, well, Orient Express.
You don't like Midnight Express Southern Boys.
No, I mean...
It's a 4 3/4 star match.
I wouldn't have given it that. But again, to me, it felt more like 3 3/4, 4 stars. God, I almost caused you to spit red liquid all over my living room. That would have been heinous.
3 3/4.
Thank you for restraining the spit take. I'll say
Midnight Express Southern Boys.
I'll say 4, maybe
it's
4 1/4.
It's one of the 6 or 7 best WCW matches of the 90s.
I feel like I'm being bullied here. 4 4 1/4.
Oh,
but still.
4 1/4.
But I mean, again, it just... And maybe that distorts my view of it. And when I hear you talk up something like this, this Rockers Orient Express match, I mean, I thought it was good, but it was, again, what took me out of it, Orient Express, basically jobbers to the stars at that time. And so I thought ultimately that it was, you know, not as much as what you thought it was. So, again, I guess we got... differ on the standards of Orient Express.
I mean,
Rockers.
I guess in the modern sense, in the modern sense, we've talked about this before, it is not going to blow you away.
Right.
But I just think that it's a lot better than a lot of other openers WWE gave me that day. And by the way, the Rockers,
yeah,
were really at their peak here, which is ironic because they were sort of directionless for most of 91 before they split up.
Right. Well, you know.
They should have been tag team champions at this point. The Hearts had run out of steam as a team. It was clear Brett needed to go solo. But the whole Nasty Boys signing, you know, I think Vince wanted to justify signing them away from WCW, so they were going to get the belts.
I agree with that. I will tell you this, that you had the same thing the next year, Orient Express, new foundation in the opener. And to me, cynically, it kind of seemed like, By the early 90s standards of whatever they considered work rate, of like, well, let's just put these guys out there for what passes for work rate in 1991/92.
I think that comparing those two matches is wrong. Unless if you're going to say one is much, much better.
This was better, but I thought it was in the same genre of, well, let's throw a bone
the
to,
new
the,
foundation?
To the early.
Foundation?
That was a pretty good match. I mean, it
the
wasn't.
The new foundation?
Yeah.
That shit team?
You got a problem with Owen Hart?
No, he's all right. He's all right. I got a problem with Jim Neidhart trying to hold my old show up for money.
Yeah. Well,
this was good. And plus, we should say it was the New Orient Express, which is, you know, which was Paul Diamond under the mask as Kato, and they were Bad Company. They worked so well with the Rockers because those teams had worked well in the AWA.
Yes, which I have to say, too, one of the joys of the WWE Network has been discovering the early ECW shows from 93 that I hadn't heard before, consistently hearing Bad Company getting put over as former AWA World Tag Team Champions 4 years later. Boy, was Paul Heyman desperate for anything to hang his hat on at that point, huh? That was really...
Pat Tanaka, Paul Diamond.
That was hilarious. Aside from the DiBiase-Virgil match and the title match that we'll get to, not much to see here on the undercard. Aside from that, Boss Man Barbarian.
You know, no, that was okay. It furthered the storyline with him and Heenan. But Boss Man was over during this period.
Here's the thing, and this is a note that I made, because, I mean, I am, and I'm not gonna go overboard when I say this, but I'm a Barbarian guy. So
Are you one of those people who think, like, the Barbarian Tito Santana at WrestleMania 6 is this lost classic? I actually got into a debate once with someone on the Death Valley Driver message board. I think it's the guy who now writes for The Observer.
I don't know if it's... Oh, that the Bix guy. Okay.
Yeah. I think I got into a debate with him. I was like, dude, the match was, like, pretty vanilla to me.
Okay.
He's like, well, what about that clothesline at the end? I'm like, okay, it was a good clothesline. I think it was him.
I might actually come closer to siding with him than you. I don't know. I like the Barbarian.
He was okay.
Like, my biggest problem...
What, do you have a problem with the Barbarian being treated as an afterthought here?
My biggest problem with the Barbarian in 92 being a world title contender for Ron Simmons is I felt like it came out of nowhere and it made Simmons seem like a mid-card guy. If you'd given Barbarian a six-month push... That would have been different as opposed to a 2-month push. No, but
wait a minute. You're talking about different promotions now.
But I'm talking about Barbarian's upside. You're asking me like what I think about Barbarian and do I think this match with Santana was a. You know, it seemed like you were probing me about how much of a Barbarian guy I am, and I'm just clarifying that. No, my note for this was I think it's a good example of guys who they can be pretty good with the right dance partners, but together. I just felt like they didn't have it.
Well, this was more storyline than match.
Yeah.
I think this was totally to the Boss Man was getting a huge push, leading to him challenging for Mr. Perfect.
Yeah,
for the Intercontinental title,
which I never got. God bless Ray Traylor, but I never got.
I thought it worked. I thought Boss Man was over huge during this period. This was like the peak of the Big Boss Man.
I just never got it. I think again, as far as like you know, the whole great worker for a big man thing was overblown. You know, if the same people that put him over,
he was
the
just
same
over.
Ones,
it doesn't matter how a guy gets over. It matters that he's over.
But if the
he
same
was
people
over.
That put him over for being a great working big man are the same ones that crap on Kane, I guess I just don't get it. You know, because you're probably using different standards.
Are you referring to me when you say that comment?
Well, I you know if the shoe fits, but
I'm not saying the Boss Man was you know Luthez. I'm just saying that he was over during this period.
Right. Well, you know, again, that one kind of you know. Made me kind of scratch my head because it should have been more. I have in my notes here, Mountie versus Coco Ware just made me ask why. I forgot that even happened. Don't get it. I mean,
yeah, it was time filler. They had time for it.
Yeah, but
I'm surprised. A lot of times they had like a non-TV match.
By 91, we should have been moving past the whole filler thing here. And particularly if they were committing to beefing up the undercards, which they allegedly were.
I mean, how long did that match go? Two minutes?
It was longer than that. It wasn't a squash.
I mean, who gives a damn about
it? It wasn't a squash.
That's something immaterial to my grading of this show.
So we have essentially now the first ever Royal Rumble with a co-main event.
Oh, wait a minute. Are we not going to talk about the Virgil face turn?
That's what I'm saying is that the sort of 1A to both of these was that match. That's where I was going with this.
It's interesting because it comes in between them.
The title match
actually comes first before the Virgil DiBiase thing.
And not to jump ahead to the title match here.
Because we're just jumping all around.
Quickly. Well, we are. But for what you said about how foreshadowed to a fault the finish of the Rumble match was, if you put it right after Warrior Slaughter, then it would just be beating you over the head with Hogan's
going to win. You're right. I actually like the way the show – I liked the way it was laid out.
It gave you a feel-good moment off of the – the Slaughter match, which was desperately needed because it was the long-awaited turn of Virgil. They'd been cranking up the abuse angle with him and DiBiase against the Rhodeses. What I said to you off-air, what I didn't like about this, I know the Rhodeses were on their way out the door.
This, I believe, was their last appearance. I believe they literally went out the door and never came back in.
I mean, and that very month, I mean, like within, I think, about 2 weeks.
Because they had given all that push to Dustin, and then it was just like, okay, you're gone now.
Yeah, and now and Dustin has said, by the way, that Vince's parting words to him out the door were, I'm going to wait for your dad to get you over, then I'm going to steal you away and really get you over, something like that. But,
Vince McMahon was cool.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Remember when Vince McMahon said good things?
A long time ago. But, you know, you have during the match, Gorilla Monsoon, like, well, we have a father-son team here tonight, completely downplaying the entire friggin' feud. Like, just randomly, we're getting a father-son team against DiBiase and Virgil tonight.
There you go again.
How is it nitpicking to ignore a feud? This is the blow-off of the feud, the rare time that a heel wins.
Well, because the heat here was not on...
They transferred the heat to Virgil, yes.
With them, they knew Rhodes was the Rhodeses were leaving.
Yeah.
And so to them, they were not worth anything. And the whole point of this... match segment was to build to Virgil's face turn.
But doesn't it make DiBiase even more of a bastard in that moment? The rare heel that actually wins a feud clean over a face. To have that to lord over everybody before. I felt like...
For that era? I mean, what do you want him to do?
Like,
I mean, did you want him to do?
Did
you want like him and Virgil to do a Meltzer driver to Dusty Rhodes and then pin him with one foot on
him?
Because that wasn't going to happen.
Go out there and just really, like, make sure both Rhodes is leaving
on
a stretcher.
I thought they did. They were buried hard out the door.
See,
the
I don't know. I thought the Rhodes got away pretty clean.
Really? Like DiBiase?
They played
was...
it like a distraction finish. Oh yeah, wow! Dusty was distracted
but
by his son.
It was almost like they were
hurt.
Props in the match. Like that. Like yeah, there's no better way to bury a guy out the door than just treat him as meaningless.
I disagree. The way you bury somebody is just to treat him like a jobber, and they were not treated as jobbers.
Well, I thought they were completely treated as jobbers.
Well.
I thought they were treated as just complete fill. Like it was almost to the point that it didn't matter that they were the Rhodeses.
Well, and maybe we're saying kind of the same thing here in the sense of again, we got a father son tag team here tonight, folks. Imagine that. You know that like what are you talking about? This is the culmination of a blood feud.
Well,
that's
then
gone
you're
on since SummerSlam.
So you want them to be put over more, is what you're saying? I'm saying that they were given the proper. I'm saying that their treatment was. Was whatever.
Well, how is establishing the history before DiBiase squashes them on the way out, putting them over? You're establishing the history. You're putting.
They wanted them to seem meaningless.
And they
wanted the Rhodes to seem that. That's the. They're like, we're going to bury you by making you completely meaningless.
Congratulations! You just sacrificed 6 months of a feud for no reason.
The feud was nothing. The point here was the Virgil thing, which by the way got over incredible with the live crowd.
It did get over.
Which I mean, you're focusing on the Rhodes who were leaving. I
just thought that was jarring.
I think that to
me
when I think of this, like I actually think in retrospect, oh yeah, that's right, they wrestled the Rhodeses. To me, all I remember is the Virgil. Is the thing with put the belt around my waist, Virgil.
Yeah.
Do I have to tell you about your mother? Which that makes
yeah.
me... And then, you know, I know you're going to be critical of Piper's commentary, and Piper wasn't very good in the color man role, but I thought he was okay here.
Well,
Trying to pump up Virgil.
The closest that he came to
this
being
worked
okay
incredible.
On
this
night.
Was a home run segment to me.
The closest that, yeah. This worked, you know, in spite of my objections, but... You know,
showing how foolish your objections truly are.
I have in my notes here, since you mentioned Piper, Roddy Piper as babyface commentator made me long for the days of Rod Trongard and Billy Graham.
Okay, that's wrong.
He gave...
Trongard is heinous, and Billy Graham didn't say what...
Roddy Piper probably gave the
he
worst...
He was better than Ernie Ladd, right?
No, I think that was the worst... I mean, I'll go back and listen to some other things, but I honestly think that's the worst... announcing job I've ever heard.
86, 87, Ernie Ladd.
Such a,
Nick Bockwinkel was really
bad,
too.
Roddy Piper, of all people, you talk about ignoring character continuity. Roddy Piper is the ultimate fan-pandering puke in 91, the ultimate do-gooder good guy.
He probably wasn't paying
attention.
Are
you friggin' kidding me? He
was picking up a paycheck.
He was horrible, and he dragged down Monsoon because
Monsoon was never
Monsoon shined when he had an antagonist. We saw Monsoon exposed when it was just somebody mouthing the same empty platitudes that he did. And together they were horrible, but I blame Piper because Monsoon was a guy that could be carried. And now heel Roddy Piper? Well, you know what? Heel Roddy Piper would have been all the excesses of Jesse Ventura without any of the pluses. But even heel Piper would have been better than this crap.
Okay. Well,
oh, it was awful.
Well, all right, so we've established that you've
down to
reached on your Rhodes thing. So the world title match.
Title
so
match.
So it was all set up by a – well, the match had already been established was going to take place.
Yeah.
But they do the big segment early in the show.
Yeah.
Which ate up a lot of time with Sherry begging Ultimate Warrior for a title shot and him turning her down.
The latest of the goofy obligatory segments on a Royal Rumble show.
Well, but I think –
this at least played into the show itself.
Yes, yes. This was meaningful, and Warrior turns her down, and it leads into Savage interfering in the match.
As she is not so subtly.
Basically offering to blow him.
Yeah, offering a B-jibbers on 1991 WWF title.
I like that.
I stole that from Kroll's show, as I steal a lot of my best material.
Okay, but, by the way, I remember, like, this is, you talk about... See, you don't want nuance. I always remember the good nuances,
yeah.
I think. Not some of this stuff you're pulling out of thin air. When Savage interferes the first time in the match, like he runs out of nowhere and he's got like the light structure, that's an awesome spot. Like, because he runs so fast.
It is. But here's the thing, though. Again, in terms of internal continuity, had they established the title could change hands on a countout, that would have had more drama to it. Because as it is, it seemed contrived that he could make it back to the ring. Remember Slaughter stopping the count numerous times?
Yeah. Well, because he wanted to win the title.
That match, and I'll again.
This match isn't terrible, actually, despite the heinous angle surrounding it. It was hot.
Well, and here's the thing, too. We talked about this in 89 with Harley Race. Harley Race in his prime could do a lot more than that shell of a guy in 89. The Slaughter who worked the Mid-Atlantic territory 7, 8, 9 years earlier could really do stuff. Slaughter, a complete shell of himself in 91. And Warrior, not a great worker on his best day.
But
God,
you know what?
The
Heat carried this thing. I'll say, as bad and offensive as the storyline was, the crowd ate it up here. Like, remember the segment where, like, the Warrior runs through the Iraqi flag and, like, breaks the
early on, yes. A lot of heat.
Jesus
molten
Christ!
Heat. To
this
word.
Crowd was insane for that.
Yes, to use your word, molten heat.
Yes. So, this was okay. They do the ending where Savage comes down and he blasts him with the scepter over the head. Slaughter gets the win. It's this big, shocking thing. And, you know, the crowd was pretty shocked that they did this title change.
Well,
I think. And, you know, it was something that I remember at the time. As a child, I couldn't conceive. Like, I was stunned that they put the title on Slaughter. In retrospect now, it was obvious that they were going to do it.
I don't know if this was a reason for your disbelief, but this may have been.
Heels also just didn't win the title back then.
Well, not only that. Now, here's the thing, too, that even when they did, remember, like, in the NWA, it would be a thing, like Flair would win it in, like, shady ways. Like, he got it back from Dusty because his leg was injured and he held the ropes to figure four or whatever. This was the first, as far as I can remember, with the major world titles at the time, just a blatant, I mean, like today, anything goes. And, like, you can hit somebody in the head with a bulldozer and pin them, and the referee won't have seen it. This was the beginning of the world title not being protected from the same kind of gaga that you saw in other matches. This was the beginning, really. Because if you think about
it. It was played up, though, you know.
You would have never seen this 3-4 years earlier, and not just because Hogan wasn't doing jobs for anybody. It was the world title doesn't change hands on a foreign object shot, especially something like this where a guy allegedly has glass in his forehead, as the later promo attested.
You know, but it was it did establish some great heat for the Warrior Savage program, which is, of course, the highlight of WrestleMania.
It did.
But so in that regard, it was okay. I mean, they had to come up with, is it the most creative? I mean, they're not going to put Sergeant Slaughter over the Ultimate Warrior Clean. I mean, the kind of heel Slaughter was, you had to do some sort of thing like this.
And they had to
Is it the most
Warrior.
Creative way? Yeah.
Right.
Is it the most creative thing they could have done? Probably not, but it. I mean, again, the whole issue was Slaughter, you know, the storyline and him winning.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're going to go with it, I suppose the way they did it was okay, I guess.
Yeah.
I think the match itself is not horrible.
I thought it was. I mean, and it was a series of.
I thought it was just a hot crowd. It was a hot match.
Hot crowd, hot whatever, but, you know, a boring match with two subpar workers, and let's just wait for the interference spots. I don't know. Maybe you're going to say I'm too jaded, but, I mean, I felt like, you know, yeah, it was a hot crowd, but I got to have more than that. And that was. And this has nothing to do with my distaste for the storyline. It's just.
I mean,
it's Warrior.
It's not a horrible match.
It's Warrior and it's 91 Slaughter.
To me, it's not a horrible match.
You give me Warrior and 81 Slaughter, and maybe 81 Slaughter can drag a decent match out of them.
I guess when I think of it, it's like, okay, again, you talk about low expectations for things.
Yeah.
I have low expectations for this.
I had low expectations, and they didn't exceed it.
Oh, really? For me, it flew.
Yeah.
Over. Like, I was like, the first thing, and I was like, wow, is this match over?
Well, and this is the whole thing here, too, and it's the same reason. You know, that you have the spin doctors working before every presidential debate in terms of setting expectations. I think the expectation bar is critical. I'll go back to that with Rockers Orient Express. You talked it up like it was the second coming. It was hard for it to meet that level of expectation. This match, it should have been easy to meet that bar. To me, it still didn't.
This is almost like a 3-star match to me.
3 stars?
Yes.
Gee, I would struggle to give it a star and a quarter. I think we're approaching dud category.
Wow, I'll tell you what. Wow, I'm interested to see what you rate some of the current product.
Yeah, well, you know, we clearly disagreed. Well, this one didn't, you know, again, I don't want to be ECW Arena guy, but this one didn't have any work rate. It didn't have any work rate, Kyle Ross.
What's work rate? You see, I don't know. Yeah, see, you're the guy who like thinks work rate has a
specific
term.
Well, you know, Sergeant Shinlock working the rest holds.
Okay,
and,
I mean, that's bad. But the opening part of the match was good. And then you called Savage in to carry it from the outside. So,
but, you know, when you need that kind of a gaga in your matches and everything it's like, you know, we're getting to, you know, the Triple H title matches at the apex of his, you know, run early to mid last decade. You know, of where everything's got to be held together by all this gaga and the foreign objects and interference and all kinds of crap.
I'm very interested to hear what you rate as, like, really good. Very interested. I'm surprised. I used to be a real negative guy.
Yeah.
You're real jaded. Let's go on to this Rumble, shall we?
Oh, this is not going to make me less jaded.
Okay, well, you know what's funny is you've hyped how much you hate this thing in the previous parts that we've done.
Oh, I do. I hate it.
And I agree with you. It's the worst of the four pay-per-view ones. This is probably better than the 20-man 88 one.
Yeah.
But we're not that different, our rating. Like, I don't like it, but to me, I just think it's a boring Rumble. Like, I don't like... There's nothing that's, like, outward horrible. It's just not interesting. And part of it is because they did the title change to Slaughter, and I think Hogan, like, compared to 90, where everyone got all this TV time,
yeah,
Hogan, I think, pretty much got the bulk of it. And it was so obvious Hogan was going to win. There's literally no one else you could pick to win this thing.
Right.
And for a variety of reasons, logically, and just I don't think anyone was over enough in the match to justify them winning. So it was to set up Hogan. It basically set up Hogan's Slaughter for WrestleMania 7 with Hogan winning. He kind of came out. He's like, I'm going to win the Rumble, and then I'm going to go on to challenge Sergeant Slaughter is what his promo worked.
Right.
And that's what happened. And it just, to me, this was a bore. There was not a lot of creativity. You had two guys get long runs in this.
Yeah.
We talk about DiBiase and what a good job he did in 90.
Yeah.
In this one, you have Rick Martel and Greg Valentine. I get Rick Martel was kind of in the big program with Jake Roberts.
52-17, so that's a new Iron Man record.
But Greg Valentine was doing nothing at this point.
Also, and Hercules and Davey Boy went very long and were doing nothing.
Yeah, it just seemed like they weren't getting over. I had heard that they were like ribs, like with Valentine. Like they were just like, we're just going to put you guys out there for a long time. But like, it just served no purpose. It's like, okay, Greg Valentine's still in the match. I'll make this point when we talk about 93.
Right.
About, like, look, it does get you over, like, no matter who it is.
Yeah.
Like, when a guy is in there for a long enough time, it will shine some spotlight on him.
Yeah.
But if you don't do it with the right guy, it's just meaningless.
Yes.
And I thought in both, and even Rick Martel, who was being pushed at this period, it just didn't matter.
Oh, pushed. A feud with Jake Roberts.
Well, here's the thing.
Who was pretty lukewarm before his turn. So
Yeah, I agree. And it built to the silly blindfold match.
You're setting the bar low if you call that a push.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, he had a program. He was being pushed. I'm not saying that
everybody
was good.
In a program's got a push?
Yes, I think if you have a program, you're getting some sort of a push. The man was a captain at the Survivor Series, Rick Morris. I'm not saying I liked it.
I'm agreeing with you. It felt disconnected from the booking for the year because if you're going to have guys go long, they should be your more important players in 91.
And he was gone after WrestleMania anyway. Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
At no point did I feel those guys were going to win. No.
Right.
And they weren't. And there was no one else. Like, there was nothing interesting in the entire Rumble, I think.
No.
Like, and yet, like, it comes at the end, it's Hogan Earthquake, which had played itself out over, like, this was the third pay-per-view. That feud had kind of gone
this
over.
This was the final blow-off, and I have some thoughts on
it
that.
It was just, to me, you know, had Hogan never won a Rumble before, especially not the previous year as the champion, maybe this feels a little more special. But as it is, boring Rumble, you know, probably it's not in my bottom tier. It is probably the last one that is not on my bottom tier.
Well, I got a couple other notes here about this. We talked about this off air. Savage didn't come out for his number 18 spot because it was implied that Warrior chased him out of the building.
But they never really talked about that. It was just kind of like they were like, oh, who was that? Or did they? Did they at the end? I think
When he didn't come out as number 30, then they were like, that had to have been Savage. Clearly he was chased out of the building by Warrior. Now, today, they wouldn't have left that to the imagination. They would have shown the Warrior chasing him into an oncoming car and, you know, whatever. So
I kind of like the way they did it back then.
Well, they left it to your imagination, much like certain forms of porn, I guess. Bushwhacker Luke went out in 4 seconds. In other words, his appearance was 4 seconds too long. So I believe that set a record at the time for going out
for
quickly.
Many years.
Yes. Hacksaw Jim Duggan trying to become the first two-time Rumble in history was completely ignored. Or, I'm sorry, the second two-time when Hogan already won it twice. But Duggan was trying to match his feat. He even gave a promo before the match. Ignored.
Well, they didn't want to put him on the same level as Hogan. He was being deep pushed at that point.
Well, the Hogan earthquake thing. I want to talk about that because here's what it reminded me of. It totally, because he was getting, at the end of that match, some extreme offense from Earthquake. Everything he had to dish out. Stuff that would have put anybody else on a stretcher. To me, this was the Big Van Vader angle 4 years earlier when he blew off the power bomb. He no-sold everything from Earthquake by the time it was all said and done. That ass to the sternum thing was supposed to be death. He got that on, what was it, Brother Love's show, I guess? And ended
and
up being
yeah,
out the
they,
whole
they drag it out of a whole six-month injury angle
yeah.
or whatever. Yeah,
yeah.
3 months or whatever.
So this was Super Hogan at his worst.
This was during the period where, well, they had already entered, where Hogan had, you know, look, he was still over, I get it, whatever. But when I'm critical of Hulk Hogan, it's kind of starting around this era where it's just like, oh, God, you know, it's like, it's this again, and it's you know, I'm like, look, I'm not crying for John Penta, bless his
right.
soul, but, and I'm not saying that, yeah, I mean, after this earthquake kind of gets pushed on the card anyway. I
right.
mean, he crushes, a hideous face Greg Valentine at
right.
WrestleMania, and then he just becomes, he does the natural disaster. So I don't think it matters, really.
Yeah.
But,
Let me ask you this.
I don't think it mattered at all.
To foreshadow 92, where we're going next. Because you and I have talked about this previously, on and off air, I believe. Survivor Series 91, Hogan already not starting to get the reactions they're looking for. Certainly Royal Rumble 92. Was it stuff like this? Was there a little bit of proto-smartness in the crowd of people being like, I'm sick of Hogan just getting shoved down our throats, no selling like this? Or am I imagining that, maybe?
I think you're imagining it. I think it's wishful thinking.
Wishful thinking,
I think it was stale.
Okay.
It was and there could be some of that. I mean, I don't know. There was no internet around here where you can, like, point to an article and say, oh, look, people were coming together over this viewpoint. I mean, I'm assuming maybe there was. I mean, Hogan clearly, I thought his second title run was kind of stale.
Yep.
The third, which obviously starts at WrestleMania a couple months when he beat Slaughter, was real stale.
Yep.
Like I mean, it was like they dragged the Slaughter thing out.
Yep.
Which was dumb. It was real stale. So, and then by 92, we get our first Hogan backlash ever,
yeah.
which
we're
I can't wait to talk about.
Up. Well, and we've been saying this as we've been building through part one of the series here, 92, the apex of Rumble booking, execution, everything, not just for this part one era, but really for the entire history of the Royal Rumble. In all likelihood, it will never be as good ever again as it will be in 92, the next segment. But,
and we'll tell you why.
Why?
Well, you'll have to listen to the next segment. I'm not going to tell you now.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to tell you now why it was.
I got to wait.
We're going to have a whole segment for 1992.
I got to wait, and we all got to wait to hear your reasoning for that.
Yeah.
But, in the meantime, again, I'm saying 1¾ stars.
I got
to me,
two and a quarter. So we're not that far off.
Not
I've
that
got
far off.
Only. I've only got 6 Rumbles rated lower than this one.
Okay. And I have a feeling this is going to be among my lowest by the time it's all said and done. But, as they like to say in certain communities here, it gets better. And it certainly does in 1992.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Timeout,
Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.